what does the technology allow you to do, right? So you get all this technology in place. Well, how does that change your approach? This technology is never going to replace property management, and even, I guess, more specifically, kind of that human interaction. I think if anything, the technology frees up your time to take a more humanistic approach, let's call it. So example, we implemented a self-guided tour process where folks can come in and they can tour a property and even see a unit on their own time. You know, they leverage an app to do that, and it brings everything together for them, gives them, you know, access to the property via the smart locks that we use. And it frees up, again, the time of a property manager, right? To be focusing on things and I hope thinking about things of like, how do I better the community? Right? How do I continue to create a community? How do I better that community? So I think ultimately this technology is going to allow us to be more focused on our residents and our individuals and less focused on the day-to-day of managing the property.
Welcome to the Prosperity Through Multifamily Real Estate Investing podcast, brought to you by Blue Oak Capital. If you are looking to take your real estate investing to the next level and learn how you can achieve your financial success by investing in multifamily real estate, then this show is for you. Our mission is to help you improve your education and learn proven strategies from industry leaders to help you master multifamily investing. Now here's your hosts, Cody Laughlin, John Beatty, and Brian Alfaro.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Prosperity Through Multifamily Real Estate Investing podcast. As always, I'm your host, Cody Laughlin, and joining me is my partner in crime, Mr. Brian Alfaro. Brian, we need a nickname for you, man. Like, I need to figure out like something cool to you know, we got to figure out something clever here, but good morning to you, buddy. How you doing?
Good morning. Yeah. If I get a nickname, that means you get a nickname, which means John needs a nickname. So we definitely got to figure out a way to make that happen.
Well, I already got some nicknames, but we're not going to say them on the air because I'm good with that. So, but hey, man, tell us who's in the hot seat today.
Yeah, today we have Mr. Kent Ritter, multifamily investor and entrepreneur. Kent is a managing director with Burge and Held Asset Management, a multifamily private equity firm with over $1.4 billion with a B in assets under management. Kent's skill set as a multifamily operator draws from a successful career as a management consultant and startup owner. Now, he applies his skill set to transform apartment buildings and create modern, affordable housing for America's workforce. Kent's career pivot was driven by a desire to free his time and focus on being a great husband and father to his three kids. Now, having found financial freedom through real estate investing, Kent wants to help others do the same. He serves as a thought leader and educator through his podcast, Ritter on Real Estate, monthly networking event, Indianapolis Multifamily Investing Meetup, and his website, kentritter.com, which acts as an informational hub for other investors. Mr. Kent, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Happy to be here today.
Yeah, man. Excited to have you here. Really honored to have you on the show. And look, man, I got to tell you, so for people that may not be able to see you on the screen when they hear this, you look like you're like right out of school, man, like college. Like you look like you're like 22 and then you got this $1.4 billion portfolio. I don't know if you have like the fountain, secret to the fountain of youth or what's going on, man, but it looks like you've been able to accomplish a lot in your life.
Well, man. I think it's good genes, right? I'm 36, so I can let you in on a secret, but I think, and the $1.4 billion definitely is not just me. I'm a small part of that. I mean, there's a huge team behind me. I think we're about 350 employees at this point. 90% of that is property management across our properties, but you know, we got a strong core team and a lot of people involved. So definitely a team effort but the growth still has been incredible. So Burge and Held started in 2008, really the last 12 years, been able to grow to about 15,000 units now at this point.
Wow. That's impressive, man. Great resume there. Well, Kent, tell us a little bit more about your background, man. How did you find your way into the commercial real estate space and what kind of drew you in?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, you hit it with my bio, right? But it is really about my why is my family. That's why I do what I do. I was a management consultant, as you said, which what that means is you're flying around the country every week. You know, oftentimes Monday through Thursday, you're gone quite a bit. And I did that for a number of years. And it was a great learning experience, right? Because you're just flying around solving problems for companies. I mean, that's why they hire you. So you get to see a lot of different environments. You get to solve a lot of problems. You realize how to do that very, very well. But the problem was I was gone a lot. So, you know, when we had our first child, it really was we have three now, but my first one, the little girl, was really turning point for me to say, you know, what kind of dad do I want to be? What kind of father do I want to be? What kind of husband do I want to be? And the last thing that I ever wanted was for my, you know, my kids to grow up and say, well, you know, my dad wasn't around a lot. Like, he worked really hard, but he wasn't around a lot. Yeah. And so consulting was not the career to stay into. As I started looking at, started asking people, you know, 10 years ahead of me, saying, you know, how do you manage that? How do you manage family? How do you manage work? And the answers I got just weren't good for my standards. It wasn't what I wanted. So realized it was time to find something that would allow me to have that freedom of time to create, you know, by creating passive cash flow, right? Passive income. And just really that time freedom was what it was all about. So as part of my career prior to real estate, started a consulting firm myself with several partners. And at the end of 2015, we sold that company. And that was really the turning point for me to say, okay, you know, that was the exit. And now I can, you know, move on. And real estate was where I landed and really developed just a passion for multifamily. Love talking about it. That's why I have my own podcast. That's why I do these podcasts, and just want to educate people, because it was something that these type of investments I just didn't know existed. And I fancied myself a pretty savvy investor, you know, being finance major in college with a concentration on investing, and then being a active stock investor for years. But I just had never heard about these type of syndications. And so once I learned about them and said, wow, you can pool people's money together to go buy something bigger and better than I could buy on my own. Well, that's fantastic. Let's do that all day. So I started out investing passively just to learn the ropes. And then as I got comfortable and really educated myself and understood what was going on, started to become active and started sponsoring my own deals. And you know, I just love it, because I look at it as being able to provide people with an opportunity that the average Joe usually doesn't have. Right, to invest in these large apartment buildings. I mean, people think that they're owned by large corporations, things like that. But I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of these are owned by groups of people just like us. So that's kind of the story and how I got to where I am. And it really turned from being a very personal journey of wanting to free up my time for my kids to turning into this kind of more mission, I would say, of wanting to just tell people that these investments are available and they can do them and give people access to them.
I love it, man. I appreciate you sharing your story. And before we kind of go down the path of talking more about multifamily, I want to kind of spend a few minutes, if you don't mind, talking about just what you mentioned about that why, that mm-hmm. driving factor and what motivated you to build this portfolio, because I'm a father of three myself. I know Brian and his wife, they're working on a family here soon. Our partner, John, he has kids. Anybody who's listening to the show, I'd argue that probably most people have families. And the struggle for an entrepreneur is allocating the right time to both the business and then also your family. Because I completely agree with you, right? Mm-hmm. That is the biggest struggle, is how do you continue to build your business, but also make sure that you're still present for your family. Talk to us about like where you're at currently in your portfolio, the impact that that's had on your family. Because I know like right now at the time of recording, man, you're in 2 weeks in Florida, you know, yeah. Vacation with your family. You know, how has that been impactful to you and your family?
Well, just I say I'm definitely not retired, right? Like I retired from my W-2, but I work harder now than I ever did. I would say even working in my own startup, right? It was kind of like five guys around a kitchen table and grew that into a business that was producing $30 million annually. I'd say I'm even working harder now, right? But the difference is just that the freedom and flexibility of my time. So for example, being able to come down to Florida for 2 weeks and set up shop here. I got the mobile studio going on. I told you guys, you know, you can't even tell in the background, you know, where I'm at. Looks like I'm still at home. And just having that flexibility, right, is great. And I do things like wake up at 5 a.m. and work before the kids get up, right? But then when the kids wake up at 7:30 or so, I'm able to have breakfast with them and spend some time with them. And you know, and they go off to preschool or what they're doing. And same thing at night. And then the odd occasion in Indianapolis where I live, where it, you know, where you get a 60 degree day in March, you know, I can knock out at 2 o'clock and take the kids to the playground, right? So just stuff like that. It's all about the freedom. I think it's about creating a schedule that works for you, right? If that means you got to wake up a little earlier, then wake up a little earlier. You know, there's a lot of benefits to doing that. And so you kind of work around that schedule and And yeah, just create something that works for you and your family.
Yeah, I appreciate you diving into that further. I mean, listen, you know, we're all in this to try to gain some type of financial independence, right? But ultimately, time is that biggest commodity. And, mm-hmm. and you know, we only have a short life to live here. And so when you can take control of that time, I think that's the true path to wealth, if you will. It's just having mm-hmm. that control of your time and being able to live the life that you want to live on your own terms. So
and I think like, well, I was just going to say like I love doing what I'm doing. So I love finding deals. I love hunting deals down. I love doing the underwriting, the spreadsheet work and seeing how they're going to pencil out and the negotiation. Like I love the whole process, but I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't. And that's the cool thing, right? Is like, mm-hmm. I'm not working because I have to, I'm working because I love what I'm doing. And so I think that's a big trade-off for folks. Like you mentioned time, the big trade-off of saying, well, do I want to be a passive or do I want to be an active investor? Right. And if you're active to do it right, I mean, it's a lot of work. So you do have to give up some time. So you better really like what you're doing. But you can just be passive and have all the time in the world. And I have people that invest with me that only invest passively and they're essentially retired. Right. And you can have all the time in the world and still get a great return. And if what's most important to you is time, then I think that's a great consideration for folks, right? I think putting that time, like you said, is the most important thing ahead of even the money and understanding, okay, how much do I really need? And at what point does making a little bit more start to eat into that time? Then, I mean, that's where people really need to focus, I think, and make the decision on, do they really need a little bit more or is it going to, you know, is it going to take away from their time and their freedom?
Kind of trying to wrap that around, you know, during your intro, you talked about, you know, you didn't know what syndication was. And when you found it, you had this light bulb moment that, wow, this is amazing. We can pull people's money together and buy these assets. And to kind of tie in what you just said, I think a lot of people that find syndications and that are looking at multifamily in general, they get really attracted to the idea of being active without realizing the amount of work that goes involved. You know, Cody and I and mm-hmm. John were very active in that. So to your point of, you know, looking at these opportunities, you really have to do your due diligence on what it takes to actually get something done. And then ask yourself based on where you're at in life, right? Do I have the time to commit to do this? And do I want to, right? If you're, you know, approaching an already retirement age, it might just make sense for you to just be a passive investor and enjoy the returns that way. So that, you know, that's something that I always try to preach to our audience. And it sounds like that's what you're saying too, is kind of, you know, reflect, look at where you're at in life and make the decision that's best for you.
Yeah, exactly. I just, I definitely talk to people that feel like they need, like, yeah, you kind of, you get excited about it. You listen to these podcasts, like you feel like you need to be active, but, I think you got to judge a trade-off for yourself, like we said, and, it's good kind of either way. It just depends where you want to focus your time. You just have to really love it if you're going to do it actively, because you know, it's a lot of work.
Yeah. You're right. But that's what's cool about what we do, right? I mean, we offer those type of opportunities for people that are looking to be more hands-off and at that point in their life where they just want to, you know, place capital, just sit back and still enjoy their time. And, you know, let us go, guys, you know, beat our head up against the wall and get, do the day-to-day grind, if so to speak. But, we love what we do as well. So, anyway, man, let's kind of go down this rabbit hole. So tell us a little bit more about the evolution of your portfolio. Kind of where did you start in building this $1.4 billion portfolio?
Yeah. And, you know, I really can't take credit for starting it. That really came from our two main principals, Tag Burge and Andrew Held. I mean, they started the firm back in 2008. And, you know, really for me, I actually met the firm Burge and Held as a passive investor first. So when I sold my business in 2015, I set out, like I said, and started investing passively, right? And Burge and Held was one of the companies that I started investing with. I invested with, five or six different syndicators, kind of spread it out. I wanted to get some different flavors, get some geographic diversity, and really just see how different people do it, right? And so I invested with Burge and Held, went really well. I invested in two more deals with them, just built a relationship over time with them. And through that relationship, you know, was able to gain access. And they're based in Indianapolis. So, you know, just continued to keep the conversation rolling with them. So developing, you know, some mentor relationships. I mean, they really even helped me as I was on my own and doing my own syndications. And then in 2020, decided that it made sense for me to come on as a partner and join and start a line of business kind of under their umbrella and continue to scale up and really allow me to scale up my personal brand and investor base and just what we're able to do from a renovation and management side and just kind of really amp that up. So really, I'm fairly new to the organization, joining just about a year ago now, known the organization as a passive investor since about 2016, and just was really impressed with what I saw through the whole thing and said, wow, I think I can really learn a lot joining up with this group and these folks that have been in real estate for, you know, 20, 30 years. And that really is the case. In the last year, I mean, I've learned an incredible amount, advanced financing techniques, you know, renovation techniques. We've got this. The thing that I think is probably most impressive is this just 8-hour renovation process, this like rapid rehab type of process where, you know, the resident will leave in the morning and come home to really a brand new apartment. It's pretty crazy. There's a time lapse out on YouTube about it, but just a very advanced process. We've done it at about 7,000 units and it allows us to come in and really change a large property in a matter of months and maintain occupancy. We're not, you know, we don't have downtime on the units. And so things like that just are kind of at that next level that I've really been able to tap into and take advantage of.
That's really interesting. I want to kind of dive into that here in just a second, but I want to go back and highlight the point. And this is something that we stress to any of the newer investors into the space. Listen, it is a lot of work and there is a big barrier to entry when you're getting into the space, especially if you're kind of looking at the level of syndication, right? I think for many people, they get very frustrated and they fizzle out because either it's too much work or they're tired of running up against the barriers. But taking the path that you took is such an impactful path to take in that you started as a passive investor, you started building the relationships, and then you leveraged your skill sets to get in with a well-established sponsorship group. And then now look, you're a partner in their group. You're able to benefit from their experience and their track record. And I just want to really emphasize for people is like, listen, you can find ways to get in this space, you know, if you're creative and you're willing just to be patient and man, just like you said, passive investing is a great way to get started for a lot of people. And it really establishes some very, very good relationships.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was definitely a way to kind of get that next level of education by being able to be behind the scenes on some of these deals, right? So being able to, you know, just ask those questions to the sponsors, like, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you financing it this way? You know, why did you make this choice? Why are you doing this in the underwriting, right? Why are you projecting that versus this? It's just a different perspective, I think, than you can get from, you can read all the books and listen to all the podcasts that you want, but you just can't get kind of that level of detail, I think, behind the curtain until you're in some of those deals. And you have to have sponsors that are kind of open. Right. And I think that's important. Some sponsors don't really want to be bothered. Others will be more open and allow you to do that. And so for me, yeah, it was a great path. I went into it always knowing I wanted to be active. I just had enough self-awareness to know that there was a lot I didn't know. And there was probably a lot that I didn't even know. And that turned out to be the case. And I think because of not only being a passive investor, but I think the other thing that's huge is just mentorship, right? I'm a big believer in mentorship. I'm a big believer from learning from others' mistakes. Like if one of my mentors tells me, you know, not to touch the stove because it's hot, I can avoid getting burned, right? I mean, and I think I've had, you know, I've probably had, you know, several hundred thousand dollars that I kept or haven't lost because of advice my mentors have given me throughout the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the most invaluable team members to have on your team is a good mentor. And you know, like you said, yeah, there's some costs associated with that. But when you think about the mistakes it's going to save you in the long run, it's good to have that person to definitely be in your corner and rely on. I know that we're part of a mentorship group and I know we couldn't be where we're at now without that support and having those guys around us. And anybody should be working to find a good mentor to work with. But talk to us a bit about Kent, like when you got into with Burge and Held, you started passive investing. What skill sets did you leverage to find yourself becoming a partner in the company and the team?
Yeah, I mean, I guess from a skill set standpoint, I found that a lot of the skills that I learned in my previous career as a management consultant just translate very well into multifamily. I mean, a lot of the skills I've developed are, you know, sales skills, project management skills, kind of change management skills. So how do you manage people through change, right? Because a lot of people, not a lot of people are good with change, right? That's just kind of part of being humans and part of our psychology. So it really is something that you have to consider. And if you're going through a large renovation or repositioning a property, I mean, that's change for everybody, right? The property managers, the residents, everybody involved. So how being able to see that vision, guide people through, making sure that we're communicating in the right way. I think a lot of it, just as a consultant, you learn to be an incredible communicator because you have stakeholders, you know, on many sides. You have people that aren't bought in, that you have to get on board. And a lot of it comes down to communication. And I found that, you know, in this industry as well, I mean, I think probably life, right? Almost everything comes down to communication, whether you're a good communicator or a bad communicator. And I think that's been a huge success for me of being able to come into the organization and have an impact is just being a good communicator and making sure that I'm getting people on board and we're all going in the same direction. And we've been able to make some pretty massive changes. And so a lot of those skills really translate very well and have made me a successful investor.
And with those skills, I kind of get the sense, are you kind of more in a role of asset management, investor relations? Like where is your role, I guess, with Bergen Held and then in your own investing?
Yeah, I mean, it's really all of the above, right? So like within Bergen Held, there's kind of several groups that are implementing different strategies from ground up development to tax credit deals to, you know, a couple flavors of value add multifamily. And so, you know, myself and my partner, Adam, we're leading a line of business that's focused on really what I call kind of diamond in the rough properties, you know, buying from mom and pop owners, typically in a smaller to mid-size multifamily where we're seeing just better return profiles than you see on the larger stuff because it's just a different landscape. There's less competition. Typically, we're in more secondary, tertiary markets. Cap rates are higher, so we're buying at better values. And we're able to do some innovative things from Bergen Held's platform to really increase the returns on those properties. And when you're buying a property that, you know, is mismanaged or undercapitalized, where we can immediately bring in professional management and the capital needed to really bring the property up to the next level, you could still see great returns. I mean, we're still profiling and underwriting returns that, you know, folks would be probably more likely to see in 2015, 16 than where we are in 2021 with where prices are in a lot of markets. So we're going deeper. We're kind of, you know, it's kind of surgical. You got to find, you know, that diamond in the rough, like I said, but we're really executing that strategy. So going back to the role, I mean, really, I'm more of kind of the front face of the group. You know, I do a lot of these podcasts and talk to folks. And with that comes a lot of investor relations, which I really enjoy. It's my favorite part is talking with investors and hearing their stories. And then, like I said, at the beginning, trying to, you know, educate them that these investments are available. But whether it's broker relationships or kind of asset selection, definitely heavily involved in asset management. I mean, even day-to-day management at times as we're implementing new strategies, we're implementing a lot of technology in our portfolio, which is one of the ways that we're creating efficiencies in these smaller properties. And so that's new to everybody, right? So everybody kind of has to dig in and get their hands dirty to learn it. So really just kind of all over the place. Then my partner, Adam, really focuses more on, so he's a CPA. He was a multifamily auditor prior to that. So, I mean, the guy knows the numbers like the back of his hand. So he leads a lot of the underwriting, the accounting, kind of those aspects of it, debt financing, things like that.
Yeah, very cool, man. Very cool. And, you know, for Brian and John and I, we've had this specific focus on assets that maybe a bit a little larger, I guess probably more the mainstream focus, which is, you know, your 100 to 200 units. And I mean, we really like the economies of scale, but I'm really glad you alluded to kind of targeting smaller assets because a lot of those smaller assets really can yield a good return profile, like you mentioned. I mean, some of those little properties can be great cash cows. Now, it takes a good hands-on manager to be able to operate it correctly. But, you know, there's, like you said, there's some opportunity in that space. And the big thing right now for us is less competition. And that seems to be the struggle in today's market is, you know, at least in our markets, you're one of 30 offers on some of these properties, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the norm. Right? That's the norm. And in that environment, you're inevitably, you're going to be paying too much, I mean, it's just, I just heard a story of a sale down in Atlanta, some 1980s Class B property that's sold for $190 a door. Replacement cost is probably 200, maybe just north of 200. So, you know, when you're looking at that, you're buying a 30-year-old property almost for what you could build new. You've got to start to ask the question, like, is that a good investment? Will you be able to sell that property in the future at the price you need to make your underwriting work? Because like, it can look great on a spreadsheet, but it's kind of the reality of the situation. That's where we're tempering a lot of our expectations is, you know, on the spreadsheet, what you're projecting, you may say you're gonna be able to sell at X, but in the reality of the situation, if that's, you know, 50 grand higher than anything's ever sold in the market before, you have to start to temper those expectations. And so, yeah, I mean, that's why I think these properties that we're looking at, I mean, that's really why we're doing this. I mean, it's definitely not easier. It's a lot easier to buy a bigger property, you know, 200-300 units where you can have a full staff on site, but the returns just aren't as great, right? And so we're really going after the returns for ourselves and for our investors because we're investing, you know, at least 10% beside them in every deal. And the economies of scale are interesting because people always ask me that. They're like, well, you know, you don't have economies of scale. And in reality, we absolutely do. When you're with an organization like Burge and Held, you're not worried about economies of scale on a property because we have economies of scale at the organizational level, right? If we're purchasing across the entire portfolio, right? And then we have that kind of global purchasing power versus purchasing for 100 unit property, right? When we buy flooring direct from China, from the manufacturer and bring it over on a shipping crate and house it in a warehouse, and then we're able to distribute that flooring to a property as we need it, right? So we create economies of scale at the enterprise level versus the property level. And it's one of those things, it's kind of like counterintuitive, right? Because you don't hear about firms like us going into smaller properties. When I say smaller, I kind of mean like 150 units and less. But you kind of have to be big and be able to create those economies of scale at that higher level to be able to be efficient enough to really run these properties. And so it's something unique, I think, in the strategy that we've been able to implement.
That's such a really good point. And I'm so glad you pointed that out, you know, looking at the economies of scale at the enterprise level, at the corporate level, right? Because I think you got to remember as an investor, as you're going to build your portfolio, you're building a business and you have to think about the infrastructure it takes to scale your business in order for you to grow your portfolio, right? Or else you're not going to make it very far, or you're going to have a lot of headaches along the way. So if you're looking to scale a good portfolio, this is such a great point. I'm so glad you highlighted that because you really got to put the right pieces in place and look at it from the corporate level and building that business.
Yeah, I had somebody on my podcast the other day, a guy named Brian Adams, and he's actually being successful in office still to this day because he's got a pretty niche strategy. But he said something to me that I've been thinking about ever since. And it was that, you know, a lot of investors think of themselves as entrepreneurs. Really, they need to be thinking about themselves as small business owners. And I was like, man, that's really true because, you know, he had an experience where the first time around, he made a lot of mistakes and kind of this is his business 2.0 that he's in now. And he learned from those mistakes. And one of the things he learned is exactly what you said, that infrastructure, right? Thinking about it like a small business, making sure you have the proper accounting in place, right? I mean, that's a big one. Accounting on these properties is a lot of work and keeping things organized in the right way, but it's critical. So while we all want to have an entrepreneurial spirit, you got to make sure that you're also creating that infrastructure and that backbone.
Well, and I think it kind of ties into the first part of our conversation we were talking about earlier, where not only establishing what your investing thesis is, but if you're not the type of person who wants to build a small business, you know, having this conversation and understanding that that's exactly what you're doing, you know, may help kind of lead you to maybe pursuing other alternative investments or like passive investing, so to speak, or something like, you know, I think it just, you have to understand the business and the nature of the business that you're getting into in order to be successful. Because I think you're absolutely right. As you alluded to, most people get in, we're thinking about from the investor mindset, not the entrepreneur mindset. Okay, fellow accredited investors, we are very excited to announce our first investment offering of 2021 in one of the nation's most attractive real estate markets right here in Houston, Texas. Our investment thesis has been centered around locating value-add multifamily assets strategically positioned in submarkets with diverse economic drivers, positive population migratory patterns and job growth, and access to major retailers and employers that will yield great risk-adjusted returns. As the nation's fourth largest city in the United States, Houston offers a well-diversified economy, great migratory patterns, and a consistently high demand for affordable housing.
In addition, it has always been a priority for us to align with top performing sponsors in our target markets when targeting our investment opportunities. Elevate Commercial Investment Group, Care Ventures Capital, and Jajorik Family Office currently hold a portfolio with over 1,200 multifamily units under management in the Houston MSA, with another 600 units under contract, proving their presence in this great market. We couldn't be more excited to align with this great sponsorship team to bring you this very exciting investment opportunity. For more information about this particular offering, visit www.investwithblueoak.com and make sure to register to receive all of the offering details. And if you want to learn the big mistakes to avoid when passively investing in syndications, then make sure to hop over to our blog at www.blueoakinvest.com and check out our most recent article addressing the 5 biggest mistakes to avoid when passively investing in syndications. Now back to the show.
Well, cool, man. Well, let's kind of go back to, you mentioned something that was really cool. And I know we're seeing this more and more frequently, the implementation of technology into the assets yourself and your business. Talk to us about, some of the technologies that you guys are utilizing. I'm more interested to learn about these quick turns that you referenced earlier. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And timely enough, I actually just wrote an article that was published in Forbes about PropTech and how PropTech is changing multifamily for the better. And so just kind of highlighting some of the things from that article is really, and we could talk about the specific technologies, but it's like more about what does the technology allow you to do, right? So you get all this technology in place. Well, how does that change your approach? And what I talked about in the article is that really this technology is never going to replace property management. And even, I guess, more specifically, kind of that human interaction. I think if anything, the technology frees up your time to take a more humanistic approach, let's call it. So example, we implemented a self-guided tour process where folks can come in and they can tour a property and even see a unit on their own time. They leverage an app to do that. And it brings everything together for them, gives them, access to the property via the smart locks that we use. And it frees up, again, the time of a property manager, right? To be focusing on things. And I hope thinking about things of like, how do I better the community? Right? How do I continue to create a community? How do I better that community? So I think ultimately this technology is going to allow us to be more focused on our residents and our individuals and less focused on the day-to-day of managing the property, right? So I think that's the goal in doing all this from a property management standpoint. And then the other goal, right, is everything we do is for our residents. So it's how do we continue to add value for our residents and how do we stand out by adding more value than the properties around us, right? So one of the big things that we've implemented, which is kind of the front door of all this, are smart locks. So we're installing smart locks on, really, we're going across the entire portfolio now, but it really started with my piece and my own portfolio and using smart locks to really leverage, again, management efficiencies on these smaller properties. So we've got the smart locks installed. We've got software that allows us to control access remotely and then layering other technologies on top of that, such as the self-guided tour and virtual leasing. The way our management works is we have like scattered site management. So I'll have one manager manage multiple properties. So instead of that manager having to go and do that tour, because a lot of people, when you think about during COVID, a lot of people don't want that face-to-face interaction, right? A lot of people want to be able to do it on their own time. So frees up the manager. It also frees up the prospect to be able to go and tour on their own schedule. And in that way, there's a management efficiency. We're able to increase the leasing times. We're not constrained by availability of a leasing agent. And it's just created a way where we can create huge efficiencies through this use of technology. And I think that the hardware is part of it, like the smart lock, but then it's what's the software that you layer onto that to really take advantage of that functionality.
Ryan, I think we were just having this conversation a couple of weeks ago, similar discussion, but obviously we're going to see some behavior changes from COVID and the way that people interact and whatnot. And I think for those that have kind of managed to weather the storm through COVID as a property owner or asset manager, those who seem to have those technological advantages seem to have done much, much better in their day-to-day operations throughout COVID. But what's interesting is I love the way that you phrased it is what the technology allows you to do or, how it makes you more efficient. And a lot of people have that concern of, well, with the implementation of technology, is it going to start replacing a human body or a position or job, so to speak? But you know, I love the way that you rephrase it where, no, it just allows you to be more efficient in areas that are more important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about the idea of like higher and best use, right? So what's the highest and best use of your time? And is rekeying a lock, which most property managers have to do multiple times a week, is that the highest and best use of their time? Or is it, you know, creating a program or creating, you know, whatever it is, it's a pizza party, it's a movie night, it's whatever, but something that can create a sense of community within their property, right? I mean, so it's all about allowing folks to focus on their highest and best use. And I think that's what's going to make the residents happy, but also going to make your employees happy as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Real quick, I had one question related to, you know, the example of the self-guided tours. Love that strategy, by the way. I think that's really great. And I think look, we're a society of convenience. So the faster and easier things can be, the better response you're going to have.
You can do it all on your phone, right?
That's right. That's right. But how are you guys as the business owner managing that? Is there any risk or downside for people that you're not engaging with or conducting these tours with? How are you kind of ensuring that they're not coming in there and making a mess of your unit or whatnot?
Yeah. Well, just practically speaking, cameras, right? We can see what's going on. We also, the way that the app works is it before someone can actually schedule, they have to take a picture of their ID. They have to take a selfie and it matches the ID to the selfie to make sure it is the right person. Then they have to put a credit card on file. And so if there was damage to occur, you know, we're able to directly bill them for the damage. So there's that aspect of it. There's the cameras on property. So all of our properties, we're installing cameras on site so we can have, again, be able to have eyes without actually having to go and physically be there. That's kind of the liability management standpoint. And then you talked about, I think you mentioned a little bit about the experience, right? How do you make sure that resident is still getting a great experience? Well, what's cool with the technology we're using, which is it's a technology called Tour 24. You think of it like your best leasing agent giving their best tour on their best day, like every time. So that's really how it's set up. It's set up through the app to create a curated walkthrough. They have these geolocation beacons that we set up throughout the property. And based on those, as someone's walking through with their phone, the app knows where they're at. And based on where they are, it is bringing up relevant information to them that actually is professionally voice recorded. So it's like someone's talking to you and you can read it on your phone. And it's like you walk up to the pool and it says, welcome to the pool, right? Here's all the information about the pool. You go to the fitness center, same thing. It's again, it's one of those things like this is a huge consulting thing, which is it's like you can go and buy all the technology in the world, but if you don't do anything with it, then it's a hindrance, right? And that's a lot of what I spent my time doing. You see organizations that they bought the Lamborghini, but they're driving it like, you know, a Taurus. And so it's all about what you do to implement that technology. And it's about, you know, getting with your best leasing agent, right? And say, how do you talk about this property? What are the things that really work well? And then getting those down on paper and making sure that every potential resident hears those things and hears those things in the right way at the right time. And you can really do that through the app. And so it's really an incredible experience if you go through it. The other thing about liability is you give a one-time access code. So they can get in one time. They can't come and go as they please and do all this. And the access code works in a time frame. And so it's kind of very specific access that you can dictate through an app, and it's very easy. And then this curated experience that they're able to go through. And then at the end of it, through virtual leasing, they can sign up for a lease right there. They can, you know, through DocuSign, sign the lease and they're off and running.
Really, really cool, man. I love the implementation of technology. And I was on a really great webinar a couple of weeks ago having the same exact topic being discussed with PropTech. And the comment in the webinar was made that, you know, real estate is a very slow evolving industry, right? We're kind of lagging behind when it comes to technological advances in our businesses. So, you know, it sounds like you're implementing these strategies now and you're having great success, but do you feel like, especially in the workforce housing space, do you feel like there's a high demand for that? Are you getting a true return on that investment with those technology pieces? Because you may have some people that are listening and are like, oh, wait, that's, you know, we don't need all that. You know, our tenant base doesn't need all that or whatnot. But what are you seeing as far as the demand for that type of product in today's marketplace?
Man, I hope other people are saying that because that's the competition, right? They can keep doing what they've been doing for 30 years. And we'll see how well that goes over the next five. But no, so you got to think about it strategically, right? We're not underwriting that we're going to get $20 more in rent because we put smart locks on. right? Because it's unproven at this point. I mean, we've been implementing this technology for about 6 months now. That's not enough runtime to really be able to say what that direct upside is from a rent bump standpoint. But think about it broader, right? So what we're doing, and the bigger part of our strategy, is we're building a portfolio of small to mid-sized properties. So we get to the point where we've got 1,000 units, right, that are spread, you know, throughout the Midwest, let's say. And all of these properties have cameras on site. They all have smart locks. They all have the same software that's tying it all together into a single dashboard for you. So a manager can manage all of this very efficiently. An asset manager can see what's going on and have a pulse on it as well. And at that point, you're creating fantastic economies of scale and really a turnkey management model for a larger group that wouldn't buy 100 units, but they are interested in buying 1,000 units in a portfolio to give immediate scale that has turnkey management that's all enabled by the latest technology. Right. So I think that even in our property that probably has an older demographic, less tech savvy, we're installing these locks because, well, one, we do give a fob option. So it's not like you have to have a smartphone. So you can have a fob on a keychain just like you had a key and you just use the fob to get in. Right. So we're not like saying you can't get in your apartment if you don't have a smartphone. So there's a fob option, but it's more about the scalability it creates at the portfolio level, which is really, I think, powerful as you think about scaling up to 1,000 units and beyond, and being able to have the same access and the same visibility in the portfolio, as it continues to grow and grow, and really create some management efficiencies there.
Again, I love that concept of just thinking at it from an entrepreneur level, right? It's about being efficient. And obviously, you know, we have so many things going on in our business. We can't just be isolated to one particular task. We have to carry multiple hats and multiple responsibilities. So being efficient with that time is so important. But again, just seeing the vision of like not looking at this from a property level, but looking at this from a business level, you know, how do I continue to scale this model and grow with the implementation of this technology, man? So really, really cool. I like that. And I like the fact that you mentioned too. I mean, listen, the reality is there's a lot of people that aren't very tech savvy, you know, but there are alternatives for them, or simple, I don't know, examples of like the key fob. You know, there's simple fixes that you can provide them that still allow you to implement your tech,
still more efficient than a key, right? If somebody loses a fob for whatever reason, you go into the app, you program the fob, the new one's ready to go. You're not having to go out, you know, bring your, like I was talking to a property manager the other day, not one of ours, but you know, a friend of mine here in Indy, and he said he carries a rekey machine around in his truck with him because he's constantly doing it, right? So if you have, you know, a set of fobs on site and somebody loses one, you just go in the app, you activate it, it's ready to go. You're not having to take the time. You're not carrying the rekey machine around, having to do that and all this. Like, it's still a better process. And honestly, even among that group that's not so tech native, Colm, right? They didn't grow up with technology. We still are having great results and just great feedback from the fob access and just the kind of the ease of use of all that.
Very cool, man. Very cool. I'd like to continue this conversation. I know we're kind of getting near the end of our time here, but really, really intriguing conversation when we talk about the implementation of technology. And I do think that when we talk about the value add strategy, I mean, at least in my perception, Brian, what do you think? I mean, the value add model has been overplayed, I feel like, in some degree. I mean, if you look at some of these assets that have been turned over hand over hand for the past, mm-hmm. you know, decade, you have four or five ownership groups that have owned them. You can only renovate a unit so many times, right? So what, and in our day of technology, our day and age right now, we're reliant on technology. I think that's where you're going to be, like you said, the big value adds are going to be, maybe not from a return on investment, but as you mentioned, the efficiency standpoint.
It's all about operations, right? We're not adding technology to these units to get, like you said, $30 rent bumps. It's not like, oh, you want a smart lock, it's going to be $20. While that is a potential, you know, value add play, it's more for the operational efficiencies and also just providing that best price, best product experience for your residents, yeah. Right? Like we're implementing this technology not so we can raise your rents, but we want to give you a higher quality standard of life. And that's going to improve our operations so that overall you get a much superior customer service experience than you would from another asset around the corner that isn't focusing on the quality of your living and the quality of the operations at the property.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think in doing that, you ultimately will see a positive return on investment. Right. Globally, I think you will. So like I said, we're not underwriting rent bumps based on tech, but National Multifamily Housing Council did a survey on smart tech. And the thing that came out of it, they surveyed residents. And what came out of it was folks would pay somewhere between, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was somewhere around $20 to $30 more in rent to have smart locks. And so there is very much the possibility that it's going to be seen as an amenity. And I think eventually it's seen kind of as a standard. But I think it is an amenity until it gets to that point where you can differentiate yourself. And I think that's what's really important for people right now. Like you mentioned, the value add has kind of been played out. And I think it depends where you're adding value. I think people spend probably too much on interior improvements. They don't spend enough on the exterior, and they don't spend enough on things like technology and other like revenue generating amenities, I would call them. So other things. So a lot of our strategy is about spending less in the unit, making them nice, but not putting in granite countertops where you don't need granite countertops, not ripping out cabinets when cabinets are in good condition and can be refaced or painted, right? Being smart about that. Because the more that you put into the unit, the more it increases your risk, right? Because you're raising your basis, you have to sell at a higher price to get your return. That all just layers on risk. So another thing that we're doing, which I'm really excited about, is putting fiber optic internet at all of our properties and becoming the internet service provider for our residents, and we're doing that about anywhere from $10 to $20 cheaper than what they're getting from Spectrum or Comcast or anybody else. We're giving them a better product and they don't have to deal with the cable company, which we know everybody hates, right? So it's another way where we're not creating additional financial burden. We're actually lessening the financial burden of the resident, but we're shifting that revenue from somebody else to us, you know? And so that becomes another income item. And it's a benefit for the resident, getting a better product at a cheaper price. We're benefiting from it. So, I mean, it's really a win-win situation. I think creating those right now are extremely important, and creating things that you can do kind of outside of the unit to add value to folks.
Absolutely. You know, when you're implementing these things like your fiber optic internet, if you're doing that across your portfolio, I'd imagine that those costs, you can negotiate those costs down versus just doing a single unit implementation.
Yes. So I love negotiating. As a consultant, a lot of what we did was we negotiated contracts. We got better pricing for folks. And I like Chris Voss is great. He wrote the book, Never Split the Difference. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great negotiation guide, but I'm kind of a student of negotiation. I love the process of it. And so, yeah, the short answer is, yeah, I heavily negotiate all of our contracts, make sure that we're getting the terms that we should based on our scale, and make sure that we're looking at things, again, at an enterprise level, right? I think that's what's really important. That's where a lot of value is created. So yes, we are using our scale and size to get the best pricing that we can, right?
Awesome. Awesome. Brian, we're going to have Kent come back and we're going to have to continue this discussion with, you know, prop tech and development of efficiencies and processes and at the business level. I really love this conversation. So Kent, what's on the horizon for you, man? Where are you going in your business over the next couple of years? What can we expect from you?
Yeah, you know, the strategy is sound. We're proving it out. It's just continuing to scale up, continuing to increase the size of the portfolio. Really, it's a lot of it is rinse and repeat at this point, right? Which is where you want to be, where you've proven it out. You know, you've got several proofs of concept and now you're going and you're just implementing, right? So we're continuing to scale out. We're continuing to acquire properties. We just closed on 50 units last week, and we're continuing to just add to that portfolio with that idea of building that scale to 1,000 units over the next year or two. And yeah, and really just focusing on building the network, bringing on new investors, introducing people to this idea of syndication, right? And then just implementing the plan.
I love it. Well, it sounds like you got all the right moving pieces in place. You got the right team. You got the right mindset. So, you know, definitely look forward to continue to seeing your success throughout this year. I know we're getting near the end of our time here, but before we wrap up, we got four more questions for you and then we'll let you go. So,
sure.
You know, one thing that we'd love to ask everybody is, what are you doing for your continued education to further your investing?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, right? So, you know, I feel like I've gotten to the level where if I go to a multifamily conference, I don't hear much new in the room, right? So I've kind of got that baseline, right? From when people are talking, I've read all the books and I still just devour podcasts. So podcasts is a big thing. But really my education has moved away from kind of the blocking and tackling of multifamily and just understanding how all that works, more to my focus now is more kind of at a macro level, you know, economically speaking, what's happening, understanding what's happening in different markets. I think you can't study markets enough, different cities, different places, and then understanding how what's happening at the macro level with interest rates and other things are going to impact us, and looking and forecasting in the future what that's going to mean. So continuing to expand my education always, but just focusing in different areas now. I think it's so important to understand what's happening in the environment around you and the implications that that has on our business. I love multifamily. I think there's a huge runway for multifamily, but always testing that and kind of rethinking, like, is this the right place to be? Is this going to provide the most value? Is this the right asset class, right? I mean, even just always testing those boundaries and making sure that the answer is still yes, yes, yes. And then continuing to just focus on technology. I mean, I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg, right? I think there's so much runway ahead of us. Starts with things like smart locks, but that really is just the beginning. And then it's all that you can layer on and the creative ways you can put that together to add value for residents.
Yeah, absolutely. What have been some of the lasting lessons you've learned along your journey?
Oh man, communication is key. Improve through iteration. Don't strive to be perfect at first. I mean, that for me, I'd say, especially with my podcast, that was a huge lesson. You know, always wanting to start off with having things great. And I think that goes back to that, just my mindset that's been framed as a consultant. It's like when people are paying you millions of dollars for your services, everything has to be perfect and you can't have any flaws. And just being vulnerable enough to put myself out there, flaws and all. I've had so many firsts in the last year. And whenever you have a first, it's never going to be perfect, right? And just being able to continue to put yourself out there and just improve through iteration, I think is so important, because you just have to get started. And if you want it to be perfect, if I wanted my podcast to be perfect, I'd still be thinking about it right now instead of being 35 episodes in and beyond where I ever thought it would go from a quality standpoint, from the guests I'm having on and what I've learned interviewing those 35 folks.
I completely agree with that. And I love that headline, improve through iteration. We're going to steal that one and tag that one, Brian. But cool, man. What advice would you give to the listeners to help them grow their business?
Yeah. I mean, some of that's, I think, translatable from what we were just talking about. But, you know, as far as growing your business, I think one other thing is just networking constantly. I think no matter what your business is, your network could never be big enough. One relationship for me that, you know, like meeting Tag Burge at Burge and Held, one of the principals, and developing just kind of this really organic mentor-mentee relationship with him has been a life-changing experience for me. You never know that one connection that's going to change your life. And so I think continue to network, be proactive at it, get out from behind the computer screen, or I guess at least Zoom calls, things like this nowadays. But yeah, you can't network enough.
Very true. Great advice. All right, Kent, tell listeners how they can learn more about you and get connected with you.
Yeah, so I'm very active on social. You can find me on LinkedIn at Kent Ritter. Instagram, it's Ritter on Real Estate. And you can listen to my podcast, which is Ritter on Real Estate, which focuses really on just how to be a better investor, really talking about different investment strategies in multifamily and learning from the pros so you can invest like a pro. And then lastly would be my website, kentritter.com. That's kind of the home base. Great place to start. We've got content for new investors, kind of 101 type of content, and also shows you the path if you want to become an investor where you can sign up. So I'm pretty approachable. You can find me in all different platforms. And so if you want to reach out, please do. I love having conversations with folks and talking multifamily.
Awesome.
Well, Kent, it's been a fun conversation, man. Really appreciate your time and wisdom, and I want to thank you for tuning in today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys. Really great conversation and appreciated being on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Kent.
Absolutely.
Today's episode was proudly brought to you by Blue Oak Capital. To learn more about Blue Oak Capital and how you can partner with us, visit www.blueoakinvests.com. Tune in next time.